This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith about affordable housing with Eugene Barnes, who's the executive director of the Metanoia Centers in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you on the program. Now, how did you first get interested in the issue of affordable housing?
When I came to Champaign about 5 years ago, I had the opportunity to meet the pastor of Bethel AME Church, who is now the pastor of St. John's AME Church in Springfield, and that was Reverend Charles Jackson. And the first Sunday I was there, he invited me to preach, which was quite interesting. You know, you just usually don't get to preach the first Sunday you meet someone. But after that, he said he wanted to have a conversation with me, and I thought, gee, was my preaching that bad? And he assured me, no, it was not. It was just some of the things that was said that was interesting to him, because he had been involved in working with a gentleman called Don Carlson, who was the executive director of the Central Illinois Organizing Project in Bloomington. And from there, several discussions led me to a meeting with the president of a National City Community Development Corporation, Danny Cameron. And Danny Cameron heard about our interest in wanting to build homes within Champaign. And earlier on, we had approached the city of Champaign to see what impact that we might have as a faith-based organization within the city of Champaign in terms of addressing some of this unmet needs.
Now, you're the founder of this group, Metanoia, and that's it's affiliated with the Central Illinois Organizing Project out of Bloomington.
That's correct.
But you started the one here in Champaign-Urbana.
Yes, I did. I had met with several of the leaders of various organizations and churches, attempting to get them to work with me on some of the ideas in terms of what I wanted to see done and what needed to be done. In terms of community reinvestment. And not being able to get them to share that idea and vision at the time, I was compelled to start Metanoia.
And what does Metanoia mean?
Oh, Steve, now, we're going to go to the Septuagint Greek for a moment. And it means to turn from the direction in which you're going and return to the path of departure. In a word, repentance, a new beginning.
Or turn around, the radical turning.
A 180-degree turn.
Uh-huh. And why is that kind of a change important in housing?
Well, you have to look at the housing situation. We consider housing to be one of the greatest wealth builders in the world today. It's better than the stock market. It's better than any other wealth-building enterprise. But many people have been disenfranchised from it. When we start looking at the low to moderate income families, those are the ones who won't be able to have that 40 acres and a mule. And to us, being able to put someone in a home gave them that opportunity to have that 40 acres and a mule. Home ownership builds self-esteem. Home ownership exhibits itself in better behavior in children and in family life.
And you, as a Baptist pastor who preached your first sermon here in a Methodist AME church, Bethel, you felt this was appropriate as a calling?
As a calling to do justice. Early on, when I was raised up in Waukegan, Illinois, at Shiloh Baptist Church, my wife and I, we both grew up in the same church, and we were involved in all aspects of the church and the auxiliaries. And we had a local chapter of the NAACP. In fact, my mother-in-law was the president of the NAACP. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been involved in community organizing for a long time.
And when you took on this task in this Central Illinois community, had it been done before?
Well, I think there are some other groundbreakers in this area who have been doing some of what I'm doing right now. Johnny Lee Johnson is one of them, who had thrown his hat into the ring to fight against the predatory lending that was going on, and CRA disinvestment and
redlining,
of course, and so you had pioneers, but we still had the problems. Just in Central Illinois alone, over 5,000 families had just lost their homes to predatory lending. So there's much work to be done in the vineyard, but very few laborers.
Now tell listeners who may not be familiar at all with this whole area of difficulty, particularly for minorities, African Americans, and others. What is predatory lending? What is redlining? What's the history of that in this country?
Well, it goes back. It goes way back, and we're thankful to the CRA Act of 1977 that
Stands for
Community Reinvestment Act of 1977. That was partially enacted by the great efforts of the National Training and Information Center out of Chicago. But banks were doing redlining, and basically what that meant was that there was just certain areas, especially in the poor and the black neighborhoods, Hispanic neighborhoods, where banks were not making loans. And so pressure needed to be brought to bear in terms of helping the banks to make good loans to good people. And then in this area here in the community reinvestment, when we start looking at the data that we're able to attain from the HMDA data, the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, we were able to see that there were certain financial institutions were not in compliance with the CRA Act of 1977.
So these were federal laws which were passed as part of the national civil rights movement, really.
Yes. Out of the civil rights movement, some things started to happen. After Dr. King had met with Richard Daley in Chicago in the late 60s, the civil rights movement started to somewhat deteriorate. It had started losing focus. And then, of course, in 1968, when Dr. King was assassinated, trouble in the leadership, and things started changing. And the Civil Rights Act was sort of brought about in order to give an equal opportunity, but it was unable to bring about the expected results and the outcomes.
Because there was this kind of institutionalized racism that affected things like banks.
Exactly.
Right. Now, let's talk about predatory lending.
Predatory lending, in a word, is loan sharking. It's where financial institutions would make loans to people with improvident lending, which means that they would make loans, but the people were unable to pay the loans back. It involved excessive fees, high interest rates, and it targeted cash-poor people. They had equity in their home, and what it did is stripped the equity out of their home. People ended up losing their home to bankruptcy and et cetera.
And in many of those cases, in those years, it was very difficult to be able to even figure out how much interest you're going to have to be paying, because that was before some of the later federal acts, which required much more transparent sharing of information with the person who was getting the loan.
Absolutely.
Well, let me reintroduce our guest for those who may have turned in after we began. You're listening to Keeping the Faith here on AM 580 WILL, and our guest is Eugene Barnes, who is the executive director of the Metanoia Centers here in Champaign-Urbana, that's affiliated with the Central Illinois Organizing Project in Bloomington, that's building affordable housing for people and making sure people can get loans regardless of their race or religious affiliation or whatever. So for listeners who'd like to join this conversation, we have two numbers. Anywhere you can hear this program, even on the internet, anywhere in the continental U.S., if you're listening to WILL.UIUC.EDU through your computer, you may call us toll-free, as can anybody outside of Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455. So that's 1-800-222-WILL, our toll-free number. In Champaign-Urbana, you may reach us on several lines through 333-9455. So 333-WILL will get you on the air here on Keeping the Faith. Reverend Barnes, when you started working with affordable housing in this university community, more liberal, more progressive than some of the communities it thinks nearby, what hurdles did you have to jump over? What barriers were there you had to get around?
Well, first of all, it was very hard trying to define what is affordable home ownership and what that meant. And that required a lot of research on my part because it was different. It's different from being in the pulpit preaching. It was a new arena for me, and there was definitely a need for it. And so I needed to spend time in terms of learning the various aspects of this business also. But using the Fed's numbers, a home should be no more than 30% of your annual income. But of course, when you start looking at 80% or lower the median family income, then the dynamics change because of the needs. And so affordable home ownership is not necessarily affordable. And within that equation of being able to afford that mortgage that it's going to cost to either build that home or to move into a rehab home, you might need a little bit more money. And so that's going to require that you have what is called gap money. And that gap money is either going to have to come from the particular municipality in which you're in or for some other organization or agency that has that money.
Now, let's go into that a little bit more deeply because some listeners may not be able to follow that if this is a new issue for them. For a middle class family, a third of their income, roughly, or 30%, as you say, most families can handle that in terms of paying for their utilities and their mortgage payments on a home. But a poor family who's making much less total money, a larger percentage of their total money has to go for food.
Necessity.
Sure. And so the third just doesn't work out. And you're saying that gap money, how do you get that gap money?
Well, let's take an example. One of the first individuals that we built a home for, the gentleman was 69. He was blind, legally blind, and he was physically handicapped. And when he came to us, he wanted an apartment. And so when I asked him what was he paying for an apartment, he told me. And at that time, I told him, I said, well, I can put you in a new home. And I could. It cost less to put him in a new home than he would have been able to afford in an apartment. Hmm. And so
he'd be building equity.
Yeah, he would be building equity. He would own the home. He would have that investment. 69 mm-hmm. years of age, he never thought he would own a home.
Sure.
But he trusted us, believed in us that we could do what we said that we were going to do. And so when we start looking at his income, he was on Social Security, and that was it. And the gentleman was only making $13,000 a year. And it was going to cost me upward of $82,000 to build him a new 3-bedroom, 1,100-square-foot home. And it actually ended up about $86,000. But he did not necessarily have enough income to be able to afford an $84,000 home. So what I did then was went to the city of Champaign, and we explained to the city what we were going to do. And the city, through utilization of the Community Development Block Grant, was able to give us enough money where we were going to be able to make up the difference between the amount of mortgage that the gentleman would be able to afford. And then, of course, we were able to get money through the Federal Home Loan Bank of Indianapolis for the additional gap money. So we were basically able to provide approximately $30,000 in gap money, which brought down the cost of that home to $50-some thousand. And then that made the home affordable for that gentleman.
Now, tell me a little bit about how banks have responded to the federal legislation of the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, of the Community Reinvestment Act of 1977. How have banks in central Illinois responded to that?
The response was not good. We know we can't legislate morality, and then when you start talking about cutting off some of the profits that these financial institutions were making. Well, you know, they came in kicking and screaming, and, you know, the accusation flew, and we don't want to do this, and the information is not correct. But basically, we were using the information that the financial institutions were submitting to the federals. And so that way we could look at that information and we could see where the problems were. But they were hesitant, reticent to even talk with us. One of our best partners in this relationship has been National City Bank of the Midwest now. And when we first approached them and we brought direct action against them for noncompliance of the CRA, well, across, they cried bloody murder. But later on, we were able to show them that we had introduced them to new business partners, to that low and moderate income and Hispanics, blacks and Hispanics. And that market started generating some more dollars for them. And then we started working with Fannie Mae, who would purchase some of these loans. And because at one point the lenders were afraid that the Fannie Mae would not purchase these loans for low to moderate income families. And after a while, we were able to show when we first launched this new product that we have that National City Bank was able to do over $10 million worth of business in 1 week throughout our organizations. And that has equated in the last 5 years to us bringing into National City utilizing this one product that we call 1% of $500 down. It has brought in over $181 million just into Central Illinois alone.
Now, that's a bank that you list as an example of one that was not doing very well in terms of lending to minorities and poor folks. Can you give me some examples of banks in this area that are at least satisfactory?
Well, when you look at the ratings that the Feds have, and there's four ratings, and when they say satisfactory, satisfactory is a passing grade, or just a passing grade for the Feds. But it has not been a passing grade for us when we start looking at who they're making the loans to. Mm-hmm. And so you've got banks like National City Bank, of course, is doing a fantastic job. Busey Bank is doing a outstanding job, and that's the top rating that the Feds give to banks who are doing that good. And, of course, some of our other partners have started doing quite well. Unions Planners Bank, which is now Regions Bank, we were able to get them commit to over $10 million in reinvestment back into the community. They're the satisfactory rating. Then Bank One, who merged with Chase, and we have written agreements with all three of these banks. And then, of course, Citigroup is not so much prevalent in this immediate area. But they're all banks who have benefited from the CRA right now. But at first, these were not institutions that wanted to get in bed with us and work with us in terms of reinvestment back into our communities.
The CRA is the Community Reinvestment Act of 1977, which required banks and financial institutions in general to invest a certain amount of money, a certain percentage of money, into poor areas that had been excluded. Can you tell us, we've talked in general, but you gave us one story of an individual. Could you give us another of a family that has been helped by this? Not by name, but just how it works. In other words, how do you find these people? How do they find you who could benefit from the help of Metanoia?
Some things have evolved with Metanoia, such as we've gotten a call in Peoria to work with one church, and what I've done, I've started a community housing development organization. We call the CHOTOS, a nonprofit 501c3 organization that's set up to build homes for low to moderate income families. And I've done the same thing in Danville. But people want homes, and there has to be a better vehicle than already present in terms of putting those into the home. And so what we do as an ecumenical faith-based organization is we try to partner up with faith-based congregations in terms of being able to partner with us and also partner with the federal government through charitable choice to be able to offer the services to the family. But we find – and the other things that we do is that – We set up credit counseling, pre- and post-home ownership credit education, so that we teach people the ins and outs of home ownership. We teach them to look at their credit score and how that's going to affect them. And, you know, some other elements. But there are many people desirous to own a home, but they never thought they'll be able to own a home. The other things that we do is we work with the financial institutions in terms of being able to not only help us provide that pre- and post-home ownership education. And lost my thought here. But also
– you work with the banks, you say.
Right. We work with the banks. And then being able to assist us in our endeavor. But when – and, you know, the other thing is having loan originators who work in the bank who are somewhat similar to the prospective home buyers. And that's one of the things that we do with the CRA is that we're working with those institutions to be able to have people of color, Hispanic, speaking individuals within those institutions so that when they do come in, they're able to be serviced properly.
So there are banks that have loan officers now who are minorities that didn't before.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. We're talking with Reverend Dr. Eugene Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, who is the founding executive director of Metanoia Centers, Incorporated, in Champaign-Urbana. The phone number for them during the week you can call 355-6423, and I should give the area code. It's 217. Because how widespread are you able to help people?
In central Illinois, we're located in Danville, Champaign-Urbana, which is Metanoia, Bloomington, Springfield, Peoria, and now we're in Logan counties. We've been able to get the farmers to unite with us. Corporate farming had become a big issue with them where no soil preservation was going on. And plus the corporate farming was taking away money from those communities and those families. So they've partnered with us. So we're quite extensive. And then we feed into our larger affiliate, which is the National Training and Information Center out of Chicago, which gives us a larger expansion of territory where we connect with over 40 other organizations throughout the United States.
That are doing similar work in affordable housing.
Yes.
Let me remind listeners, you may join this conversation. Do call us, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of our station, of course. That's a toll-free call outside of Champaign-Urbana. In the Champaign-Urbana area, do use a local number, 333-9455. That's 333-9455. W-I-L-L. We're talking about affordable housing, and we're talking about the relation of, in this case, a National Baptist pastor who has worked with other religious organizations, churches and others, on this social justice area with big institutions like banks. Now, how do you feel about the combination? Is there ever conflict between the religious standards you have and the kind of things you do to build affordable housing?
That's interesting that you would ask that, Jack, and it's something that I've oft-time pondered, and it has to go back to the responsibility that faith-based organization, the church, has to the community. In seminary, we studied that great theologian and pastor, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, very intelligent man. And he made a statement that the church exists solely for the world. And we have a responsibility through the mandates of God and his commandment that we're to do justice. Micah 6 and 8 talks about we should do justice, compassion, and humility before God. And the church is the church when it does exist for the world, when the faith-based community organization is ministering to the world. Ministries is about people. And when we look at the role of Jesus, he identified with the poor. His address was there. And those are the outreach. I mean, you know, when we look at the resources that the faith-based organizations have, they're immense. And those resources, they're for use in the world. They're in use to help people in their plights and their situation. We're not to rescue people out of the world, but to redeem them where they remain in the world to continue to do justice.
Now, as a Christian pastor, can you be open to people of other faiths or of no faith? What do you do with Muslims who come to you and say, we need help too?
We're Metanoia, CIOP, NTIC. We're an ecumenical faith-based organization that has welcomed in Muslim, Jewish, Protestant, Methodist. We're a ragtag bang of many people and organizations, and we're really not, you know, we're colorblind when it comes to religion. Religion is man's way of having God accept him. Religion is a store that promises you everything, but when you go into the store, there's nothing there. Christianity offers us the opportunity that says it's the end of all religion. It brings us together. It motivates us to work with other people, meeting them where they are and dealing with them in their daily plights.
Now, you were telling me before we went on the air that you've been in Champaign-Urbana area about 5 years. Let our listeners know a little bit more about your background. You started in Waukegan?
I was raised in Waukegan, Illinois. Attended Shiloh Baptist Church under the auspices of Right Reverend Dr. J.N. Lightfoot. Both my wife and I, we grew up in the same church together. We were involved in many of the auxiliary within the churches. We're on the choir. We're on the usher board. I was the assistant to the superintendent. I was treasurer in the church school. I was involved in the Junior Masonics, Prince Hall Lodge number 17. And while attending high school at the same time, I was going to barber school. So at the time when I graduated from high school in June and September the same year, I had my barber's license.
I suppose that's why your beard looks so much better than mine.
Maybe so. And it was just a thing where most of the deacons in at our church were growing up were barbers, and it provided me a livelihood to be able to. After high school, I went to school in Milwaukee, and my future fiance, who had escaped me for over three decades, went to school in Iowa, and so we were separated. And then I went to New York. I went to New York to do hair, and I was a hairdresser for approximately 22 years. While in New York, I attended school, Malcolm King Harlech Extension of Marymount, where I met an interesting gentleman, one of my professors, Reverend John Hatchett, who introduced me to a course called Black Philosophy, which is quite interesting. And it moved me into some other areas. And then in 1974, I got involved with an organization called the Council of Independent Black Institutions, where I took a teacher training, went through a teacher training institute, ended up becoming a teacher teaching in an alternative school in New York. One of the schools, Steve, as I was telling before, we had gained permission from the Guyanese government of South America to start a school. And, of course, at that time, Jim Jones...
Of the People's Temple.
Yeah, of the People Temple. They were also in Guyana. And then, of course, we all know what happened to those 800-some-odd souls who were eventually killed. And then the Guyanese government retracted. They backpedaled on their offer to let us start a school there. And then, of course, we did start other schools around the nation, then outside the country. And I was trained. And in fact, at one time, I had wanted to go to Africa to be a teacher, but it did not happen. Someone else got sent in my place, so I continued to stay here in the States. And eventually, I spent 35 years on the East Coast. And one day, I received word of where my childhood sweetheart was, and she was here in Champaign. And so I dropped everything and hurried to Champaign, shamelessly of me. But
And you've since married.
And yes, I have. Kept my promise.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're talking with Reverend Dr. Eugene Barnes, who is the director of the Metanoia Centers that work with affordable housing. And we're going to be talking more about affordable housing in Central Illinois and the Central Illinois Organizing Project, of which the Metanoia Centers are a part, for the second half of our program. But let me just take a little break and let our guest have a sip of water. And let me remind listeners who some of our guests coming up on Keeping the Faith will be. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'll be talking next week with Joan Nelshoppen and Claire Zoke about the Peace Bazaar. On November 27th, my guest will be by phone Professor Stephen Carlson, who's the author of The Gospel Hoax, about the so-called secret Gospel of Mark. That'll be November 27. Coming up in December, we have several interesting guests scheduled. Larry Lieberman, a poet and professor at the University of Illinois, will be talking about some of the spiritual and ethical issues dealt with in the poems of his most recently published book. We'll also be hearing later in December about the Greek Orthodox Church from Father George Pyle. Coming up this week here on WILL AM 580, there are a couple guests scheduled for Focus 580, which listeners to this program may find particularly interesting. David Inge will be talking by phone with Professor Hans Kung, internationally known a Catholic priest and scholar, theologian, author of a classic book called simply The Church, dealing with the Christian church, its understanding of it. Professor Kung is the president of the Foundation for a Global Ethic, and he'll be talking with David Inge on this Wednesday, starting a little bit after 10 o'clock. That's the 16th of November. So that's Professor Hans Kung. That should just be a real treat for people to hear Dr. Kung and be able to ask questions. And on Friday of this same week on Focus 580 at 11 o'clock, a little after 11, Daryl Beiler, who's the director of the Mennonite Central Committee, will be talking about the work of that very interesting social justice organization for the Mennonites. So those two programs coming up on Focus 580 Wednesday at 10 and Friday at 11. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Since 1873, the University Y has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for students to do community service, for social action, have been helping the university in many different ways. For years, the Y provided, for example, freshman orientation for new students with freshman camp that the Y sponsored up for several decades before the university took over that important job. That's one of the programs the Y originated, which the university became convinced was worth doing. We have others going on currently, but that's one example from our past. We heard the student president of the Y speak earlier this week about the various programs that students are involved with, dealing with the environment, dealing with tutoring in the schools, all sorts of things. And it's good to be reminded of how inventive college students can be and how caring they can be about others and about important issues in the community. One of the ways people get involved in the University Y is through CUMUniversity. This is a free university, free class. The classes cost a little bit, but the offerings are open to the public to either teach or take classes. And we're looking for teachers starting for our next semester, starting in January. So between now and the end of December, if you have something that you know that you'd like to share with others, perhaps make a little money doing it, do call the Y. Ask for Paul or Becca at 337-1514. That's the University YMCA. We're located at the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street. Our address is 1001 South Wright. The Y is a 501c3 charity, and we are able to continue our work because of people who consider our work important and who over a century and a third have supported the Y. If you'd be interested in making a contribution or perhaps even donating a vehicle, we have a vehicle donation program so that you can take what we sell the car for off of your taxes. Do give me a call. I'm Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500. Well, we have a caller who's waiting to speak with our guest today, Eugene Barnes. You're on the air, line one. Go right ahead.
Okay. I have a couple questions. I know that this may overlap with Habitat for Humanity or low-cost housing through anti-tomb or some of those things. Can you distinguish how the difference is, and I know how important a home is with the winter months coming on. It's a good place to be able to hide and call your own. Anyhow, can your speaker illuminate that for me?
Well, thank you very much for the question. How do the Metanoia Center's programs mesh with, for example, Habitat for Humanity or other groups that are concerned about affordable housing?
I guess the similarity is that we do try to make homes affordable. And one of the things that Habitat is able to do that is different from Metanoia and probably other groups is I believe they're able to offer interest-free loans. And that makes the house much more affordable if you don't have to pay that interest. And then Habitat provides what is called sweat equity, where the prospective home buyers and anyone else can come in and perform some of the labor and or supply material, which also reduces the cost of the building of the home. We utilize that too in some respect. We've utilized the local unions here in terms of helping us build two of our homes, and then what we do, Metanoia does, is we look for that gap money, the additional financing, to help us to be able to buy down the cost of that mortgage for the prospective home buyer.
Now, Habitat for Humanity is limited in the number of homes that can be provided because they're built by volunteers, often along with, as you mentioned, the people who are going to be living there who provide that sweat equity by working alongside other volunteers. But Habitat can only do one home a year, or maybe two, I think, in this community, if I'm up to date on that. Whereas with Metanoia's programs, you're able to, by getting traditional financial institutions like banks to make good loans to people for mortgages, you're able to help more people.
We're able to assist more people. Metanoia itself has started two faith-based organizations, one in Danville, one in Peoria. We've assisted another church in Peoria in building two homes. We're in Springfield right now. We're working, hammering out the details of where we'll begin to build five homes out of 40. And through our affiliate organizations, which number 40 across the nation, we're able to exponentially expand our process and where we're able to put people into homes. At one point, we were able to put, every 3 days, we're able to put a homeowner into a home in Central Illinois.
Wow. Now, tell me about the Central Illinois Organizing Project. You're related to that. Metanoia is the Champaign-Urbana affiliate, but what does the Central Illinois Organizing Project do in general?
It's an institutional-based community organization made up of a faith-based congregation. And we have found that we don't allow individuals to join, but we do allow organizations to join. And we're able to assist them in coming together. What gives us a power is organized people and organizing dollars. And when we're able to present a face to corporate America in terms of some of the issues that we're facing in our communities, they'll respond. They might not listen to me, but when we're able to put 100 or 1,000 people into a room, we're able to do that. In 2004, we went to Washington, D.C. to speak with Karl Rove. Karl Rove refused to speak with us, and we understood that Karl Rove had problems then. They didn't just emerge. Well, that Monday morning when Karl Rove woke up, he had 1,000 of us on his lawn. And so we're able to get the attention. We're able to get the attention of organizations such like Citigroup. We brought direct action against them. We went to the FTC and we explained what Citi Financial was doing, especially in relationship when they first purchased the Associates, which was a predatory lender. And through our efforts, the FTC filed a $50 million lawsuit against them. Fannie Mae organization has looked at what we're doing, and we have one of the largest anti-predatory lending campaign in the nation. We're second only to New York out of 8. And Fannie Mae has committed $50 million to NTIC, CIOP, and the Metanoia in terms of what we're doing to be able to refinance those the predatory loans that people have received.
Now, one time you took a course in black philosophy, you told us in the first half of this program. Did you read Malcolm X?
Well, of course, I think I read some of everything that was prevalent at the time, which was required reading at the time. But it really wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It's like we weren't studying Hegel and Kant and some of the others. It spoke mostly about the black presence within the Bible. Of course, the class was taught by Reverend John Hatchett at Malcolm King College. And it started opening my eyes and it got me to reading a lot. And one of the things that I do offer right now, and I've been doing on a monthly basis probably the last 4 or 5 months on UPTV Channel 6, is offering a redemption of an exegetical examination of the African presence in the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's the blacks are mentioned in the Bible, and it's, you know, you just won't find African American or Negro or those terminology. But when we're able to demystify that presence in the Bible, we're able to see where blacks have played a prominent role within the Bible.
You're listening to Keeping the Faith here on AM 580 WILL. Our guest is Eugene Barnes. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment about this whole issue of affordable housing, do give us a call, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Incidentally, if you've missed part of this program or would like to hear others that have been broadcast already on WILL on Keeping the Faith, these are archived on the web, and you may go to WILL.UIUC.edu and then click on AM 580 and then Keeping the Faith. And this program will be there in a couple weeks, and previous programs are already there. So if you would like to see what you've missed, that's one way to do it.
Steve, one of the other benefits of our association with the financial institutions that we work with is that we have what we call as a hotspot card. People who feel that they have been a victim of predatory lending, from Citigroup, National City, Regions Bank, Chase, our partners, they're able to submit what we call a hotspot card, and then that starts an investigation into whether we can make a determination to see whether that loan was predatory. And if it was a predatory loan, then what we started doing is working with the financial institution to put them into a conventional loan, thereby saving them from losing their home or even going into bankruptcy.
Now, you're on the board of the Central Illinois Organizing Project, and another group you mentioned is the National Training and Information Center in Chicago. Can you tell us what that group focuses on?
National Training and Information Center out of Chicago has probably been around for near 40 years, and usually, you know, they just start off with local neighborhood actions and then just involved into other major national pieces. We're in affordable home ownership. National Training Information Center has partnered with the Department of Justice in terms of neighborhood safety. Home ownership, CRA, we're constantly monitoring the CRA and the law so that none of the financial institutions try to fly under the radar of the CRA Act to keep them in compliance. There's just a lot of things that eventually evolves. We're into transportation. One of the things that the Central Illinois Organizing Project is into bus transportation in the Springfield area. Minimum wage, we're working with that. We're also working with the farmers in Logan County in order to help them with their problems.
We have we just lost our caller. We had one waiting on line one. Maybe they'll call back. We'll see. Let's see. When you do this kind of work with local families, how can they contact you?
They can reach us at our office at 355-6423 daily. We're on the internet. We have a web presence, Metanoia Centers. That's metanoiacenters.org. You can go to the web at CIOP for Justice.
Thank you. And I see we do have a caller again on line one. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello there.
Yes, go right ahead.
Do these programs use taxpayers' money?
That's a good question. Most, except for...
Are these guaranteed loans? Are these houses, the loans or mortgages, are they guaranteed?
These are regular conventional loans that you would get from any financial institution.
Is it guaranteed?
When you say
are the loans guaranteed?
If it's a FDIC federally insured bank, is that what you mean?
No, are they guaranteed? Just like it's been before, they've been going into houses, guaranteed loans. They get 30-year mortgages. They pay off a few dollars. They let the houses run down, and when they just move back out, and they don't own nothing. And the government, the people are stuck with the money and the bank loan to the bank.
No, sir.
Thousands and thousands have went through that way.
No, sir. No, sir.
Hmm?
No,
what
sir.
They have. Oh, I don't know whether this program, does I have a guarantee?
Well, no, it's not a program. What we just do is...
Well, I know. All right. Between blacks and whites, how many homes blacks have you helped and how many whites? What's the number?
In terms of black and white...
Yeah.
We don't deal in terms of black and white. What we deal...
Oh, yeah. Well, how do we know that's not reverse discrimination then?
Reverse discrimination.
How do we know that?
Our job is getting money out on the streets.
We got a university down here in Illinois that's barring whites from the grants. The Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against them. So how do we know there's not reverse discrimination in this country?
With what, sir?
Well, in your housing.
It's not...
If a white person, would you help a white person to come there to be helped?
One of the homes that we built in Champaign was for a white family.
One.
One.
For blacks.
And one was for black.
One was for blacks.
Right.
That's, in other words, you keep the ratio even, one and one?
No. These people have to go, prospective home buyers must go to a bank and get qualified for a loan. And it's at that point that we're trying to work with them and get down payment assistance and other funds to put them in
a
home.
How much down payment do you have to give?
It all depends on how much money that they will qualify for a mortgage at the bank and then how much the home is going to cost.
I know that some of these people that's got that put on $100 and on a $75,000 home, and the loan is guaranteed, and they don't care whether they pay it off or not, and they don't even repair it; they just move right out. And thousands of homes have been that way, especially after World War II, and guaranteed, and the homes weren't too good over that they built. Leavitt built. You remember Leavitt?
I'm Levittown in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And the same thing with the with other people. I mean, they get a 30-year mortgage, and they pay less than the mortgage than they do the rent. And that way they don't care whether they keep it up or not. They just, you know, just take off, and the people are stuck for the bank loan, you know.
Situation arises, and any type of money lending is a risky business.
Yeah, I know that. But I say, are these guaranteed loans by the government? Well, if they don't pay it, the government has to pay it. Well, actually, we don't. The people have to pay it. The government don't have any money, you know.
Well, we think you made your
the people's money. It's the people's money, you know.
Well, we think you made your point. Thank you very much for calling. So in terms of the kind of loans that you're able to help people get through conventional loans, do you have records of the default rate of people?
The default rate is negligible. The default rate is negligible due to the fact of the pre and post home ownership credit education that goes along with it. The financial institutions and both we ourselves throughout our organization have found out that pre and post home ownership education is very important. Letting individuals know the ins and outs of home ownership, what it's going to cost them, their responsibility in that, and it has been very negligible. And there are many different programs, of course, now. You've got to have a very good product for people who just don't have enough money to purchase, be able to purchase a regular home at a conventional rate. And so it's incumbent upon us to continue to work with the financial institutions, work with the federal regulators in terms of bringing around products that will make that home ownership affordable. And one of the products that we've worked out with Fannie Mae and with National City Bank is what we call the 1% or 500 down, whichever is less. And we look at non-traditional methods in terms of putting that person to the home. We look at the banks will look at the credit score, but they won't consider the credit score in terms of approving that application.
So, so someone who could qualify for one of those loans, what would motivate them to keep making the mortgage payments?
Well, the aspect of just being able to have their own home, being a homeowner and not a renter. If you can afford to rent, you can probably own a home.
And why would people want to do that?
Well, home ownership is not for everybody because the responsibility level is not there. But it's an investment that you make in yourself. It's an investment that you make for future generations in your family. And it's just a good, sound investment.
Mm-hmm. And over time, houses in this community, in this country, in fact, have tended to increase in value.
They have. Our efforts in the Bristol Place community and where we're located, Roger Morris, the director of single family homes, and Ida says that it takes 3 new homes to change a neighborhood, and it takes 6 homes to make a demonstrable change. And so when you start new construction or you start the rehab, what it does, it brings up the value of that investment that homeowners have. It makes the neighborhood better, and the municipality in which that new construction and the new home ownership starts, it starts all to benefits everybody.
Hmm. Now, when people get this education, both before they buy the home and after they buy the home that Metanoia Centers provides, that Central Illinois Organizing Project provides, what are some of the things you teach them?
Well, what we do is we utilize organizations that we work with, the Central Illinois Debt Management Company, that is run by Kathy Leary here, and we send them to those organizations. Some of our clients go to the Urban League, some go to the financial institutions, and they're taught financial literacy. One, I mean, you know, you've got to look at budgeting. You got to learn how to budget. You make so much money a month, most of that's going to have to go out, and you're going to have to keep a good ratio between your expendable money, and then you're going to have enough where you're going to be able to pay your mortgage. So there's a lot, and we don't just leave the client in terms of just putting them into the home, but we continue to work with them because there's other education that may be needed. They may need a better job in terms of being able to stay in that home once they're in there. You know, it's not enough just to put them in the home, but we also want to make sure that they stay in the home, and we also want to keep them apprised of predatory lending practices that are going on so that if they do get into the situation, they're not going to risk losing the equity in their home or their home.
Are these rent-to-own places predatory?
And I'm not sure, Steve, if I exactly understand what you're saying, rent to own.
Well, like if I can't afford to buy a TV, you know, you can start paying rent on that can mount up. But often the cost of those things end up being two or three times what it would be if it paid cash for it.
Yeah, they're quite expensive, and they can get you into trouble. They're just like the payday loans. You know, when you start looking at the interest that you're paying on the payday loan, it exceeds nearly 450%. And so some credit education needs to go on for people who feel that they need to go to these payday loan type operations. They're very injurious.
We're down to our last minute and a half or so for this program. What are your hopes for affordable housing improvement in this community?
I think their homes are being built. Of course, there are more homes needed in this area than are being built. And surely with the financial institutions, we need the investment for them, but we also need that collaboration between both private and public sector in order to make this happen. Continuously looking at making home ownership affordable to anyone that wants it, who can afford it, and who can sustain it. Collaborative efforts must continue in that arena. And we look at what the Housing Authority is doing, especially in Birch Village. We look at right across the street what that organization working with the Urban League, who is providing the credit counseling. We look at some of the other efforts, of course, with on the North End. And so we're getting the homes built. But then again, when you start looking at the individuals who make 80% or more of less of the median income, will they have enough money to be able to get into these homes?
Well, thank you very much, Reverend Dr. Eugene Barnes, who's the director of Metanoia Centers that works with affordable housing in Central Illinois, has been our guest today on Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'll be interviewing next week two folks talking about the Peace Bazaar that's coming up on November 27th. I'll be talking with Professor Stephen Carlson about the secret gospel of Mark, about which he has quite a bit of skepticism. On December 4, the poet Larry Lieberman will be our guest, discussing some of the ethical and religious themes in the poems in his most recently published new book. Later on, Father George Pyle of the Greek Orthodox Church, Three Hierarchs Church in Champaign, will be our guest talking about Greek Orthodoxy. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
What makes a classic? Well, for one thing, it's got to have some staying power. The Bob Dylan song, Like a Rolling Stone, was recorded 40 years ago, but many still think it to be the greatest pop single ever made. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on the Peabody Award-winning To the Best of Our Knowledge, Greil Marcus tells us what makes Like a Rolling Stone a classic. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Wind, Water, and Light, now at 10 Main Street, downtown Champaign, holding a grand opening November 18th, 19th, and 20th, with music by Mark Smart on Friday evening, Joni Lawrence, Ethan Chilton, and Jimmy Rowland Saturday, and Barbara Hamilton on Sunday. Leaves and Beans Coffee will be served on Saturday, plus a reception at 3 p.m. for 2D artist Timothy Pittenger.
WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy and colder with a low in the mid-30s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour this evening, becoming light. Tomorrow, partly sunny in the morning, then mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the afternoon. The high in the mid-50s with light winds becoming southeast around 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.